Let's talk here on a Wednesday as we launch into the second hour of the program, and we are delighted to be joined by Dr. Michael Berkman, political science professor at Penn State. We had him on earlier this fall, and we thought with the presidential election year now officially underway, and you can just feel the country coming together, uniting Dr. Berkman. It's just, this is such a wonderful process for our country to be able to go through. First of all, thank you for taking the time. We do appreciate that. What are we to expect other than the unexpected with this presidential race here in 2024?
Hi. Well, nice to hear from you again, and Happy New Year. I don't know that I would expect it to be a unifying experience, but it will certainly be an interesting one.
Yeah. I do think this feels like it's going to be unlike any other presidential election we've had before.
Absolutely correct. Yes.
This is
unique in many ways, right? Because you have essentially two presidents running against one another, which I don't know that we've ever had, at least not in a very long time.
Yep.
And we've never had a presidential candidate with so many legal issues hanging over their head. And the other candidate is apparently being impeached. So It's quite unique.
And we have, if I'm not mistaken, Dr. Berkman, I think these, if it does end up, in fact, being Biden versus Trump on the ballot in the fall, I believe I'm right on this, that they'll be the two oldest presidential candidates.
Absolutely.
Squared off against each other in an era where everybody says, we don't want old white guys leading us, and we're getting up with the two oldest white guys we've ever had as our options.
Well, you are correct about that. I mean, we're not there yet. We're not there yet. But if it is Biden against Trump, it would be the two oldest candidates. And a lot of focus is put on Biden's age, but I believe Trump is only 3 years younger than he is. So it's two older candidates, to be sure.
Well, we are.
But we're not there yet.
we're getting there a little too quickly. Yes, indeed.
Right.
Let's see. We are. What are we? 12 days away or so from the New Hampshire, from the Iowa caucus, and then we have the New Hampshire primary. Let's start there. Talk a little about the Iowa caucuses and kind of how that came about. Scott and I have had some fun talking about that, and we wouldn't mind sitting in on one of those, because it is it's a very unique process in our American voting system. Talk a little bit about that. How did we get to the caucuses in Iowa being what kicks off our presidential campaign every year?
Yeah, well, that is an excellent question. Now, keep in mind, for the Democrats this year, that's not really the case. So they've kind of moved Iowa out of the first place. But, of course, they're not really having a competitive primary, so it doesn't really make a difference.
Gotcha.
But yes, Iowa has long had this position. It's kind of secured in the party rules. Caucuses are used in some states, but not many. They require quite a bit of effort on the part of people to participate. You have to go out on a cold February night. You have to go somewhere with your neighbors and not just cast a vote, but actually spend some time talking about it and, literally caucusing, meaning that you go to different parts of the room and stand with other people that are supporting your candidate. If they don't have enough, then there'll be some shifting around. Caucuses are hard to predict. They're hard to poll, because you don't really know who's going to show up, and because they're kind of moving targets. People can change their minds when they get there in a way that they're much less likely to do in a voting booth. So that's how, so Iowa comes first with that caucus, and they are well-practiced in how to caucus. Would be a bit of a mess if we tried to do it here, I think, but we don't have the experience at it. Right? And then we move to New Hampshire, and by the time we get to Super Tuesday on March 5th, most of the delegates will have, or not most, but a third, well over a third of the delegates will have already been determined. It's very possible that if it's Donald Trump, he will have secured a majority of the delegates by the end of Super Tuesday. Very quickly, in other words.
Yeah, it is amazing how quick the process kind of sweeps through. Do we have any sense for the you mentioned it's difficult to project or predict. Well, first of all, you said there's not many other what are there other states? I wasn't aware. Are there other states that do caucuses?
Yes, I believe Nevada does a caucus.
Okay.
At least on one side or the other. Now, sometimes they mix caucuses with a popular vote. Keep in mind that the rules for choosing delegates vary by state, and no two states are exactly alike in how they choose them. Some use caucuses, some use conventions of different types, others mix together voting with caucuses. And then they have different rules about how the delegates are apportioned, whether or not, for example, it will be proportional or winner-take-all. Once you get to Super Tuesday, then winner-take-all rules tend to kick in, and people can amass delegates very, very quickly. But it is a state-by-state basis.
Now, is it the state's parties that then make that determination, or who makes the call on how the states determine the ultimate representative?
Well, it is a combination of state party rules and state laws that might govern how a primary is run. Because keep in mind, primaries are run by the state, but the rules about how the delegates are apportioned, for example, or exactly what system they're going to use, is very much influenced by the state parties. And that's important, because Donald Trump has been able to put his people in and take control of state parties across the country.
Yeah.
And so he's been able to adjust the rules, and Donald Trump is not alone in this when you're in a dominant position, to favor him. So, for example, they've been able to change the rules in California, which is a Super Tuesday vote, to make it virtually winner-take-all. That is a lot of delegates that will be determined on one day.
Yeah, it is. We see this, and I know there's been attempts to fix it, and they'll at least tell you we have it fixed now in Pennsylvania with the gerrymandering. But it is amazing what the individuals or parties in power can do to change or, I would use the word manipulate, the system to mm-hmm. try to favor themselves, and then as soon as the other party does it, hey, what are you doing? You can't just automatically switch us up.
That is a legacy or a consequence of federalism, and the U.S. is different from many other democracies this way. We don't have any kind of national elections. The election day is national day, but the election rules, all kinds of rules about how our democracy are run, are made at the state level. And therefore, the party that's in control is often going to have a lot of say about, as you point out, how congressional districts are drawn, how state legislative districts are drawn, and the rules governing the allocation of primary of delegates.
Well, and it's not even really election day anymore. It's the election, I don't even know what it is, month plus, because of the mail-in voting. Some of these ballots, right, are cast a month in advance of actual election day, which,
absolutely,
again, I think is a problem in and of itself, just because you don't know what's going to happen in that month. And I don't know. And there's a lot mm-hmm. of moving parts in our system, that's for sure.
I think that is definitely a consequence of the mail-in voting, is that you have people voting well in advance of others. And you're right, a lot can happen.
But do you have a preference between, because the caucuses just seem neat. Like, I don't know, it just seems like kind of a fun way to do it. You get into a room and it's almost like a jury where it's like, all right, do you think this guy? No, I don't think this guy is. This is the right. And do you have a preference on the caucuses or the primaries? Because I kind of think the caucuses, although it'd be certainly more difficult, I think, to manage, but it seems like it'd be a fun way to go about it. I don't necessarily know that, you know, the fun factor is what we should be most heavily weighing on how we select
somebody. At all, though. I mean, democracy should be fun, right? We should be able to enjoy ourselves and talk with our neighbors and have discussions with them about who would be best for the state or for the country. So I think caucuses do have some value, and they are, they're not for everyone. I think in very large states they would be completely unmanageable.
Yeah.
But Iowa is a small state. They're practiced at it. And the Iowa caucuses have always given candidates that don't have a lot of name recognition, that don't have a lot of money, the opportunity to kind of establish themselves, get known, practice their campaigning, and emerge. I mean, this is how Jimmy Carter emerged, and in many ways it's how Barack Obama emerged. So it's an interesting, it could be an important way of early in the process. But one thing to consider is that, the more difficult it is to participate, and so caucuses are more difficult to participate in than primaries,
yeah,
for example. And a closed primary is more difficult than an open primary in many ways, because you have to be registered with one party or another. And so it does have the potential consequence of having the most committed and the most partisan people making the decision. And some people fear this contributes to polarization. So, it depends exactly what's important to you, and there are a lot of different factors to balance.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think the caucuses, right? I mean, it's up to you whether or not you want to get in there and participate. But mm-hmm. I think what you end up with is a more engaged, right? At least that would be the theory,
exactly.
A more engaged electorate.
You're a more engaged, but also that also often equals more partisan, more focused on particular issues. But yes, absolutely, more engaged. Look, to go out on a cold Iowa night in February, and it is always a cold Iowa night in February, requires some real commitment.
How important, really, are Iowa and New Hampshire? There's obviously a lot of attention. They are the first two, and that's why there's a lot of attention. At the end of the day, how important is it for the candidates to make a mark in Iowa and New Hampshire here out of the gate?
It's not super important in terms of the number of delegates. A third of the delegates are going to go on March 5th alone. Which is Super Tuesday. But it is very important, I believe, in the dynamics of the race, in winnowing the field down, and in establishing, in determining whether or not candidates are able to live up to their expectations or exceed their expectations. So, for example, expectations for Donald Trump in Iowa are very, very high. He's polling quite well in Iowa. He's acting, he hasn't participated in debates or anything. He's acting as though he's really the incumbent and it's all his. Now, if he doesn't do as well as we're kind of being led to believe that he will, I think it can hurt him going forward into New Hampshire and then the others. Also, I think whoever comes in second in Iowa will receive a lot of energy, a lot of money, and a lot of attention that will help them in New Hampshire and then going forward.
Do you think we're going to see somebody emerge, whether it's Nikki Haley or Ron DeSantis, somebody, as a viable alternative? Viable meaning like somebody that could actually end up being on the Republican ticket here coming out of Iowa and New Hampshire. Like, are we expecting any kind of a real race heading into Super Tuesday, in your mind?
So I think a real race is not impossible, but it's certainly not a higher probability event. So, if Donald Trump does less well than he's expected to, and let's say Nikki Haley does better than expected, and comes in second. I mean, because right now I think DeSantis has some advantages in Iowa. He's better organized. Organization is very important in Iowa because you got to get your people out.
Yep.
Much more so than polling. So I think DeSantis has some advantages right now in Iowa. But if Nikki Haley does better than expected, that'll give her energy going into New Hampshire, where she's polling quite well. And Donald Trump, I'd say New Hampshire is a weak state for Donald Trump. It will have probably more independents voting in its primary than it will Republicans. And this is not the best field. This is not the best set of voters for Donald Trump. So if then something happens in New Hampshire and then you go into South Carolina, you can kind of see momentum building for another candidate. You also have all the legal issues going on.
We do. We'll pick up on that. We got to get into a break here, Dr. Berkman. We'll be right back, and we'll pick up on
that. Your home for the Goon and Ironhead, exclusively on Sports Radio 98.7.
The Fox. Fox on the Run. The Fox Ironhead.
Lady Lion basketball coach Carolyn Krieger picked up the 150th win of her coaching career, and Penn State cruised to a 95-55 win over Northwestern at the Jordan Center last night. Penn State went on a 19-0 run in the first quarter and never looked back. Allie Brigham's 17 points led four Lady Lions in double figures. Northwestern committed 28 turnovers in the game. Penn State is now 10-4 on the season, 1-2 in the Big Ten.
The Fox
college wrestling team rolled to a 62-9 win over Williamsport last night. The Little Lions received four forfeits and recorded five pins, a technical fall, and a decision in the victory. With the win, the state high wrestlers evened their record of 3-3. Next up will be a match at Cumberland Valley Thursday evening.
Sports Radio 98.7. The Fox. Sports Radio 98.7.
State College is looking for book donations to help in the May 2024 book sale. You can drop off your book donations anytime to the outdoor bins at the workshop located at 2197 High Tech Road near the airport. Your donation will help the State College American Association of University Women advance equity for women and girls in our area.
We don't just talk sports.
The Fox.
We live it. Sports Radio 98.7.
The Fox.
Bear Belly's Beverage in downtown State College, located at 258 West Hamilton Avenue within the Hamilton Square Shopping Center. At Bear Belly's, they have over 500 beers, including domestics, imports, microbrews, seasonal selections, ciders, and more. Bear Belly's is open from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Monday through Saturday, noon to 5 p.m. on Sunday. Check out our website at beerbellysbeverage.com. Bear Belly's Beverage, 258 West Hamilton Avenue in State College. Beer better, Bear Belly's.
Talk about great prices. Center Hall Farm Store has fantastic deals to help you save money all winter long on heating wood pellets.
Come here, Bear. Come on. Come on.
Oh, yeah. And for your ferocious little pomapoo, shepherd, horses, and just about every other farm animal, even your birds. Center Hall Farm Store has created its own perfect, unique mixture of feed, along with commercial feed of your choice. Center Hall Farm Store, 110 West Allison Street. Center Hall. CenterHallFarmStore.com.
Hi, this is Corey Comfort from Joel Comfort Toyota in State College. Are you looking for a dealership to call home? Joel Comfort Toyota is a locally owned family business that has been serving the community for over 45 years. Come see us and let us help you with your next vehicle experience. We're located at 120 East Clinton Avenue in State College, just behind the Waffle Shop on North Athens Street. Or visit us 24/7 at joelcomfort.com. And remember, good things happen in your community when you buy local.
The title and tag service that is customer-friendly and locally owned is at Joel Confer Quality Pre-Owned in Pleasant Gap. And as part of the Joel Confer family of dealerships, Monica Prisk is experienced and has been serving customers for 13 years. Cameron Confer is on the title and tag team and is there to help you with all of your title and tag needs. Stop at Joel Confer Quality Pre-Owned at 475 East College Avenue in Pleasant Gap and have Monica or Cameron answer any of your title and tag questions. Remember, good things happen in your community when you buy local.
Here's the Ocean State Job Lots Foxcast. Sunshine today, the high 38. A little bit of snow tonight and tomorrow morning may dust the ground. The overnight low tonight, 28. And some sunshine tomorrow, the high temperature, 34. Friday, plenty of sunshine, high 34. But a major winter storm on Saturday could leave 6 to 12 inches of snow. This is WeatherBell.com. Chief Meteorologist Joe Bastardi.
Sports Radio.
Fox.
Get up and get going with the Happy Valley's 98.7 The Fox.
And we are back with more Let's Talk here on a Wednesday morning. Sorry if you have a kiddo at home and sick. We let the S word slip there in the weather forecast. I don't like when we have that S word. I'll talk to Joe Bastardi about that. By the way, we're working to get Joe on to talk a little bit about the impending storm on a day I'll be trying to get back from Oregon on Saturday. We'll see how that goes. We're joined by Dr. Michael Berkman, political science professor at Penn State, as we talk about what I think we all agree will be a fascinating 2024 year on the political scene here. A lot of unprecedented things occurring as we head into a year which, presumably we will have a president one way or another elected in November. Again, Dr. Berkman, we do appreciate your time. You were talking about just the legal situation, and I wanted to follow up with that. Your thoughts on Colorado and now Maine deciding to remove Trump from the primary ballots. Your reaction to that, and how do you think this plays out? Do you think the U.S. Supreme Court intercedes here?
Well, I think they're going to have to. I think this is just not the kind of decision that really should be left to the states, or will be left to the states to decide. And, you know, there's not a whole lot of precedent to draw on here, but I would be surprised if the courts allowed that to stand, if the Supreme Court allows it to stand, but we'll see. I think they're going to decide quickly. I think the more important legal questions really are going to be the fact that the president's trials could be beginning very close to or during the primary season, but that he's likely to have amassed enough delegates to secure the nomination before there are any verdicts or before the trials have really moved very far along. And that could put us in a very, very strange situation.
Strange is a good way. good way to put it.
He could end up having the delegates to secure the nomination, and then potentially be found guilty, and then who knows what happens?
Whole different level of fascination at that point. Any chance, Dr. Berkman, is you're looking at it, that Joe Biden isn't the Democratic nominee when November rolls around? There's a lot of folks, especially on the right-wing media, that are convinced that one way or another, Joe Biden is not going to be on the ticket in November. And again, we hear all kinds of names, Michelle Obama, Gavin Newsom, others being thrown out there. In your mind, any chance, outside of health issues, that Joe Biden wouldn't be the nominee in November?
Yeah, the whole Michelle Obama thing I don't get. It seems like some sort of paranoid dream of some kind. Michelle Obama's never expressed any interest in elected political office, and in fact, really did not care for elections at all.
Yeah, has a disdain.
So that would surprise me. It's hard to see that scenario where Biden is not on the ticket, with the exception of health issues, and you know both of them could potentially face health issues. They're older, so it happens. But other than that, I think Joe Biden truly believes in his heart of hearts that he's the person who can and should beat Donald Trump, and he intends on doing it. Could change, I suppose, but it's impossible really for me to see how. There are no primaries. So, you know, you can go back to, say, Lyndon Johnson in 1964, he did badly in the New Hampshire primary and decided to pull out and not run for re-election.
Yeah.
And but that's not going to happen here, because there really is no challenge to him, certainly nothing viable that's going to threaten him. And he's made sure of that.
Yes. From a third party perspective, Any chance? I mean, the No Labels Party, we had a representative on our program, I forget, about a month ago, I think. And, you know, Joe Manchin is being mentioned as a possibility there. Any chance that a third party candidate of some kind gets some traction in the environment that we're in? And do you see, is there a circumstance you can envision where a third party candidate could emerge and end up actually winning the election in November?
Not really.
Yeah.
But I do think that these other candidates could have an impact on the election. Remember, they only have to have an impact in one state, and or one or two states, and that can make a huge difference in terms of not allowing one candidate to get the 270 electoral votes that they need, or throwing the state to the other candidate. Right? We've seen that happen before with just a few thousand votes. But I certainly think there are other candidates out there that could have an impact. No Labels is one, but do I think Joe Manchin could actually win the presidency? I don't really see that scenario at all.
Yeah.
And because of that, I actually don't think Joe Manchin will do it, because Joe Manchin, if nothing else, likes to win. And I find it hard to believe that he would run for the sole purpose of throwing the election one way or the other. But I have no deeper information on that. It's just a gut feeling about it.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, I think they could. I think, you know, look, on the Democratic side, somebody like Cornel West could make a real difference in college towns, you know, in states where college towns are important, in Michigan or Wisconsin, in younger voters who are very disillusioned with Joe Biden over, for example, the Mideast right now. They're not going to go vote for Donald Trump, but you could see that, you could see some votes being pulled away that way.
Can Robert Kennedy have any impact in your mind on what happens here with the Democrats?
Well, he too, right? I mean, in a state with a small number of votes, potentially, I think that Bobby Kennedy's I think he has a problem that he didn't have before October 7th.
Yeah.
And that is, he is extremely pro-Israel. He is quite outspoken about it and quite articulate about it. And I think that cuts right into many of the people that were supporting him in the first place. So I see him as maybe less of a problem for the Democratic Party than he might have been. But, you know, he's a Kennedy, so he's got enormous name recognition. You know, the whole anti-vax thing appeals to people from both parties. So, you know, can't rule it out. Because, again, it just takes a few thousand votes. Remember Ralph Nader.
Yeah,
Jill Stein.
And listen, is it possible that somebody that we're not that is not on our radar right now, you know, throws a hat into the ring and not a viable threat to win, but could throw a big wrench into the plans for either of the major party candidates?
Yes, it's possible. Remember, they have to get ballot access, and ballot access is not easy. Now, one way to get ballot access is to run as the candidate of a party that already has ballot access. And so, at one point, wasn't Cornel West running on the Green Party? And the Green Party has ballot access, and then he pulled out of that. So you could see somebody emerge to run on one of these parties that has access to ballots in at least some states. But it would be very hard for somebody, you know, like a Ross Perot type to pop out now and be able to put together what's needed to get on the ballot in very many states. Not impossible. Money can do a lot of things, but it seems highly unlikely to me. Very difficult anyway.
The spring semester gets underway for you next week. I've got to believe this will be a fun semester for you to teach. How do you go about covering a historic race like this with your students? Like, what's the approach you take in the classroom here as they come back with what, again, is going to be obviously a very contentious and very hotly contested race, and no matter how it turns out, I think a lot of people's feelings and emotions are going to be ramped up here in 2024.
Yeah, well, I happen to not be teaching this spring, but in the fall, it would clearly be a big part of the it would clearly be a big part of the syllabus, because a lot of the students, especially in political science classes, will be working for candidates on one side or another, and will be pretty energized. I think there's a bit less energy with students around the primaries, which are taking place far away places, and seem a little bit preordained this time around to many people, like, oh, it's going to be Trump and Biden. It's hard to get excited about it. But, you know, my teaching generally tries to focus on some of the things that we've talked about today. I think it's important for students to understand how primaries differ from caucuses, who votes in them, what the implications are of the people that vote, why it's important that states make the rules around elections and how these rules differ and how the rules come about. Tend to focus on things like that rather than the particulars of what either candidate might be talking about.
Yeah, I mean, the process itself is interesting, yeah. And I think a lot of people, you know, had their eyes opened as to, you know, again, kind of how that process actually works in terms of the delegates and how we handle that with the last couple of elections. And I think that's all good for folks to learn a little more about the process. What when you you say you're not teaching in the spring, you're like a sabbatical, or
it's just I direct the McCourtney Institute for Democracy, so I don't necessarily teach every semester. I have other jobs that I do. Now, within the institute, we'll be bringing in lots of interesting speakers around the election, speaking to all kinds of different issues around it. And it's a little early for me to announce exactly who they are, but I think we're going to have some high-profile and really interesting people coming through campus.
Oh, that's awesome.
And that's where a lot of my energy will be in the spring in terms of the election.
Yeah, gotcha. Very cool. Well, so that's what I was just wondering. So you'll have some interaction, though, with the students at Penn State in the spring. When you, in your experiences, are you, are the kids today, and maybe it's a little different with the classes or the kids you're around, maybe they're a little more energized than the normal student population, but do you get the sense, do they view politics differently than, like, I never grew up, but I was raised as a kid in the 80s, and so I came up in the kind of the Reagan era. But I was always interested, well, not always, but from high school on, I took an interest in politics. So what are you seeing on the campus in terms of the interest level and just how they view it? Is it as polarizing on campus with young people as it seems to be on the national level right now?
Yeah, well, I think that's a great question. So politics is much more polarized now than it was, say, in 1980 when you're talking about it. It was polarized then too, but not nearly like it is now.
Yeah.
And not with the same sort of almost tribal intensity that it is now. And I think that actually that has a pretty negative effect on students, that it turns them off, that it makes that for many students. Now, I mean, there are some students that are pretty highly partisan themselves and are very involved in the process and are out there working for candidates and issues on both sides. So they're just like in the public, right? There are these really intense partisans. But students, younger people tend to be independents far more than older people do. They tend to be uncomfortable with the intense polarization and partisanship that we see in politics. I think it turns many of them away from politics, or at least had been. One thing, though, that we've seen since the election of Donald Trump is a kind of restoration of younger people voting. They've been turning out in larger numbers. They did in 2018 and 2020, and I expect 2024 we'll see something similar.
Yeah,
high turnout, but kind of disgust. How's that?
That sounds about right. When you look at the election process again, and Pennsylvania's role, because Pennsylvania is going to be one of those critical states, certainly, in 2024. Your thoughts on whether Pennsylvania, at some point, should move up? It doesn't matter if they move up and like become part of Super Tuesday. Again, not this year, but down the road. Is that something Pennsylvania should, in your mind, look at?
Well, if it wants to, you're right. I mean, Pennsylvania is what, sometime in late April. I think the third week of April is the Pennsylvania primary. So, you know, on the one hand, if they have an intense race going on, as they did, right, with Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, by the time it came to Pennsylvania, it could be pretty exciting, and the state can be pretty decisive. But it seems unlikely for that to be the case this year.
Yeah.
I don't know enough about how the law works in Pennsylvania that would be involved in moving it up.
Yeah.
Remember, that primary day involves a lot of different elections. It's not just the presidential election, and the parties will be thinking about that as well.
Yep, that's a great point. Dr. Berkman, we are out of time. Thank you so much for joining us.